WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I wanted renewables, wind and solar, and I wanted to get on the only resource we have in America that can replace foreign oil, which we have abundance of, which is natural gas, and I wanted that to go into heavy-duty 18-wheelers.
Natural gas, powering trucks. That was T. Boone Pickens, better known as an oil man. So 150 years ago, America had a gold rush. Today, we have a natural gas rush. Hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show for today. The image of nuclear energy is melting down in Japan. Coal is as deadly as it is dirty. It's what you get on Christmas if you were bad. Everybody hates oil except the oil industry. Solar and other renewables aren't in mass production for whatever reason. But new gas deposits and new technology is making the United States the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. Pennsylvania and upstate New York, you might say, are the Texas. T. Boone Pickens and the New York Times new op-ed columnist Joe Nocera are talking up natural gas. It was the cover fuel in Time magazine a few weeks ago. It's one of the biggest creators of new jobs and tax revenues in the country right now, and boy, do we need those. A bill introduced in Congress this week would offer $5 billion in seed money to build heavy-duty trucks, just like Pickens wants, that would run on natural gas instead of dirty diesel. Nocera quotes Pickens saying that just moving the country's big trucks to natural gas could cut our OPEC oil imports in half. And natural gas often gets labeled a clean fuel. But that's becoming the controversial part. The new drilling technology that's making all this gas exploration possible, hydraulic fracturing or fracking, can pollute local water supplies. You've heard about the moratorium imposed by New York State to protect the city's reservoirs. And a new study from Cornell University finds natural gas, contrary to popular belief, might produce even more global warming than coal over the long run. The industry disputes the study. One of the most frequent requests we get from our listeners is to talk more about fracking, usually to talk more against fracking. So we'll start on that topic this hour. Natural gas, our energy independence future, or a new fool's gold. Joining us for this is Time magazine correspondent Brian Walsh, who wrote that Nat Gas cover story and then followed up when the Cornell study came out. Brian, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much, Brian.
How much of our energy, by way of background, does the nation get from natural gas already?
We get about a quarter of our electricity now comes from natural gas.
Mostly for electricity and as a home heating fuel?
I mean, that's for the electricity, and then, of course, it heats about 60 million American homes are heated by gas now.
Is it cheap compared to oil?
Well, it is right now, and that's what's sort of new and different about the situation as opposed to in the past. Gas has always kind of been the stepsister of fuels. It often had a very volatile price. You could see it go up, and then you could see it go down, and that made utilities rather shy about doing long-term deals on this because they never knew if the price was going to change. It also tended to go up and down with oil, but what we've seen since about 2008 is that oil, after dipping post-recession, has gone back up. Gas has stayed very low, and that's mostly due to the fact that you do have, with shale gas, a much larger domestic source than the industry had expected in just a few years in the past, and that seems to be, when people talk about the Saudi Arabia of natural gas, that seems to be what's really changing the economics of it at the very least.
And listeners, if you want to get in on this gas conversation, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Tweet at Brian Lehrer if you want a question or comment sent to us via Twitter or post to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And the U.S. has more shale gas ripe for drilling than we used to? Is that right? Or is it just that the drilling technology has changed?
Well, I mean, obviously the gas is millions of years old, so it's been there all these years. And in fact, GL just knew that there was gas down there. I mean, there has been drilling in Pennsylvania and actually in upstate New York for a long time. The first natural gas well ever drilled was in Fredonia, New York in the 19th century. But you weren't able to really get at it until this hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling, the two sort of methods together, came together in Texas in the 90s to really begin to tap shale gas there. And then you saw in the last decade it begin to move to the Marcellus Shale, which goes, you know, from about Ohio, parts of West Virginia, Pennsylvania, upstate New York as well.
Before we get into the environmental controversies, do you agree with Pickens and Nocera after doing your research about the potential here? For instance, that there's potential for powering heavy trucks with natural gas, and if we did that nationwide, we could eliminate half our OPEC oil imports?
I'm rather skeptical about that, to be honest. I mean, yes, you can do it if you chose to really force long-haul trucks to do it, and that might be a possibility if you just did it on trucks on really long-haul transport. But you're talking about having to really put a whole new infrastructure in. You know, I mean, that is expensive, that's time-consuming, and of course, we're going to get into the environmental issues. I'm not sure you'd want to be doing that unless you were pretty confident that this was a much, much better choice. So I sort of find that unlikely. I think it's much more, from an environmental perspective and from a long-term sustainability perspective, smarter for us to focus on electrifying transport as much as possible. And gas can be part of that. I mean, gas can be part, potentially, of a mix of cleaner, again, although we'll get into that, sources of electricity. And I think if we try to electrify transport, that's a much smarter choice for energy security and the environment than trying to really put a lot of this gas towards transport.
Here's a little more of T. Boone Pickens speaking at the Council on Foreign Relations in a conversation with Frank Sesno, promoting that idea of devoting a lot of money to converting the truck fleet.
So I would want to give $80,000 to a 18-wheeler, 350,000 of them. What's it get for us? First thing is going to cost you $30 billion. But every gallon you use of natural gas will be 1 gallon less of foreign diesel. So you're getting a gallon-for-gallon trade-off. It creates 450,000 jobs directly and 1,600,000 jobs indirectly, and it reduces your imports by 4%.
So that's
you can do that with 350,000 trucks, and there's 6.5 million 18-wheelers in America. Are all of those candidates? No. Some of those trucks are 10 or 15 years old. I'm going after the ones, and my model here is Swift Trucking. They have 20,000 18-wheelers, and they get 23 Kenworths every day, 365 days a year, which is 7,000. So they're rolling that fleet out every 3 years.
T. Boone Pickens. So he's got a big vision there, and he's thrown a lot of his own money at it. And I guess this is the immediate policy question on the table, right? It's that truck conversion project that Congress might throw money at?
Yeah, that is the Nat Gas Act, also known as the sort of Boone Pickens Act. And that, you know, it does have bipartisan support. The president, obviously, while expressing concerns about some of the environmental consequences of drilling, certainly right now he keeps natural gas in his sort of clean energy standard. So, you know, in a Congress that's so divided, this is something that might actually go forward. But I guess you have to wonder, I mean, A, how important sometimes energy security is. It tends to be we always talk about cutting foreign oil, but I have to wonder whether it's always as meaningful as people like Pickens are making it out to be. And, of course, obviously Pickens stands to benefit significantly financially himself from this. You called him an oil man. Actually, he's more of a natural gas man, always has been his career, and uh-huh. He has a lot of holdings in this.
Though he says he doesn't need the money. He's already got all the money he could possibly need to live on for the rest of his life, and he's doing this out of a sense of patriotism. Do you doubt it?
I'm sure both could possibly be true. You know, I mean, if he were doing something that somehow really didn't benefit him financially, that would be potentially even more patriotic. But I'm sure in his mind, patriotism and profit for the industry and the jobs that doing this domestically as opposed to importing oil would create all sort of come together.
Jenny and Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
I was just calling about the natural gas situation in Russia. They seem to have a plentiful supply of it and use it for heating in their homes. I'm wondering why we aren't taking advantage of something like that.
Great question. Do you know about Russia, Brian? Because they are known as a natural gas exporter, I believe. And how widely do they use that gas that they also have a lot of for their domestic fuel?
Oh, they use it quite widely, and in fact, it's very interesting. I mean, they are a huge gas exporter, and they always stand to benefit from this. And in fact, it's interesting. Russia is sort of talking down shale gas in the U.S. in part because they're concerned, not just in the U.S., you can find shale gas in Europe and in China. They're concerned that if this resource gets widely used, it could take away some of their sort of their control of this market, and Russia in the past had shown no compunction whatsoever about using its gas supplies for political reasons. I mean, it'll shut off gas to parts of Europe through Ukraine if something upsets it. So obviously, if that begins to get broken, that sort of takes away some of their political power, which is a sort of interesting geopolitical spin on this whole issue, which goes well beyond just the Northeast and the U.S.
Do we have so much gas in the United States that we could become an exporter of the fuel?
Potentially. I mean, that if you sort of believe the biggest reserves estimates and if actually it all gets tapped, certainly that's possible, which is a reverse of what was thought to be happening just about 10 years ago. Cities were actually building big liquefied gas, natural sort of terminals to import gas from overseas. The idea was the U.S. is running out, we'd have to import it. Well, now those terminals might actually be used in reverse to export out gas to other countries.
Fabio in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I was calling because I saw the movie Gasland, and in there they were showing off the very, very bad examples that happened from the fracking. Is fracking the only way that they can get this? I mean, what does Russia, for example, use? Is there another way to get it out?
That's a great question. And we had the director of Gasland on the program. That was an Academy Award-nominated feature-length documentary, and we know about the fracking, this drilling technique, controversy in New York State as well as elsewhere. Is it the only way to get all the shale gas out?
My understanding is that it is the only way to get this particular kind of gas out. I mean, the U.S., you have other sources of gas, what are known as conventional gas, where basically you drill down to large pools, reservoirs of the gas. It's fairly easy and fairly inexpensive to get up without having to do the fracking process where you're putting down millions of gallons of water to basically pressurize out that gas. So because of the nature of shale gas, you see the gas is kept in a very narrow band of rock thousands of feet beneath the earth. To do it, you have to drill down, drill horizontally through that shale, and then do the fracking process. So my understanding is the only way to get this gas out is through that, which, of course, has all these issues that have not been fully answered yet.
We're talking about natural gas. Is it the energy of the future for the United States? There is so much of it in New York, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere, and this fracking technology now lets us get at it if we choose to do so. But let's talk, Brian, and my guest from Time Magazine is Brian Walsh, who wrote a big cover story and then a follow-up about it. Let's talk about the growing environmental controversies. First of all, natural gas is a fossil fuel, but it sometimes gets labeled a green fuel. How did it get that reputation?
Well, that's because usually it's being compared to both oil and to coal, and from the burning perspective, I mean, if you're actually a natural gas plant, you're burning gas versus a coal plant versus oil, it produces less carbon at the burning point. It produces also a lot fewer traditional pollutants, mercury, sulfur, nitrogen, all the things that come out of coal that create things like smog, that create things that lead to problems like asthma and so forth, or problems like mercury contamination in fish. You see that much less with gas. So that's usually why it's been referred to as such. The question that's becoming more apparent is whether, when you look at the entire lifetime of drilling, the getting the gas out of the ground, transporting it via pipelines, whether there might not be actually some of that gas escaping into the atmosphere, which would actually increase the warming potential of gas and change that equation.
But the fracking rush is changing the debate about the environmental friendliness of natural gas. You wrote that thousands of wells have already been drilled in Pennsylvania just in the last few years, and state officials are feeling kind of overwhelmed. Thousands of wells?
A few thousand wells have been drilled in Pennsylvania, specifically Marcellus hydraulically fractured wells over the past few years. And yeah, so if you're looking at the environmental question, there's sort of the two sides here. There is the carbon question, which we might get into later, which is sort of how much does it add to global warming. And then there's the sort of the water question and also the question of spills, things like that, that come from the industrial process of drilling. And I think what happened in Pennsylvania, which is the main area where this Marcellus drilling and fracking has happened so far, has been whether, you know, the regulators were a little caught off guard by how fast this grew. And, of course, Pennsylvania is not Texas. It's not Wyoming states or Colorado states that have a long and recent history with drilling, with possibly with regulation. This is fairly new. And I wonder, and a lot of people wonder whether, you know, the industry moved faster than the regulators on this.
And we will get into the carbon question in a minute. But Barbara in North Jersey, I think, has a call related to what you just said. Barbara, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. I'm originally from Scranton, Pennsylvania, and I've actually studied the long history of the coal industry in that region and the environmental impact on it. And I am concerned, and I've been monitoring the Marcellus situation for quite some time, because I think there are a lot of similarities in the fact that they're very sophisticated industry actors who have moved into that area and took a lot of farmers and people with, fair educations, but not educated in environmental issues, and have offered them cents on the dollar to be able to frack under and around their properties. And my concern is there's already environmental issues that are happening there, and neither the state of Pennsylvania has appropriately taxed these industries or required that there be money set aside for these environmental problems, and the regulators are not on top of it. And if we don't get out in front of it, certain beautiful areas and natural resources could be laid to waste, and there will be no money to clean it up.
Barbara, what's your sense of the public popularity in Pennsylvania now of this fracking? Because it's also creating many jobs, and some counties that have a lot of fracking are actually seeing increases in local tax revenues, while, of course, county government all over America, local government is seeing, you know, threatening dips in tax revenues. So how do you see the public in Pennsylvania developing their opinions on this?
I think that the public in Pennsylvania has been so lacking for jobs for decades and decades since coal pulled out and left waste in its wake, mind you, that what's happened is I think that that long-term memory has faded, and this new generations just want jobs, and they're not thinking of the long term. They're not thinking that they may have jobs now, but they may not have them for their children 20 years from now because, again, of the waste and the inability to have the funds to clean it up when the Marcellus Shale stops producing.
Barbara, thank you for your call. And Brian Walsh, what is this Cornell study casting new doubts on natural gas as better for global warming than coal? Because that was the given, that we want a post-carbon future and natural gas is a cheap, plentiful way to get there.
Right. Robert Howarth, who's a researcher at Cornell, tried to look at the entire life cycle of the shale gas production, going from the fracking process, getting the gas up, that has to be gathered at the well, then has to be piped out, and finally gets to where it's being used. All gas travels mostly by pipeline. And he found that by his estimates, and admittedly he'll say this himself, his data is very preliminary, in part because it's very hard to get this data. The industry isn't always either taking good track of it or being very open about it. That possibly a lot, up to I think almost 8% of the methane, which is the main ingredient of natural gas, which is also a major global warming gas as well, actually escapes through the process at some point, gets out of the well, gets out of the pipeline, is vented and so forth, gets into the atmosphere, and there has a very strong global warming effect potentially on the atmosphere, enough that by his calculations at sort of the worst case, it actually would, over a 100-year process, add more to climate change than burning and producing coal. So that's basically what he's saying. Now, that's one study. There are other studies that have estimated a much lower level of gas loss. The industry certainly says there's a much lower level of gas loss. That's sort of the question we're grappling with, is getting these answers and figuring out what's going on here.
And so, once again, the jury remains out. The New York moratorium, is that only around the New York City reservoirs, or is that statewide? statewide.
No, that's statewide on fracturing on this kind of drilling as of now is my understanding.
And it's temporary. The jury is still out politically too. Governor Cuomo's position on fracking has really yet to be determined. Here is Cuomo as he campaigned for governor.
Well, let me tell you my position. Until we know what we're doing, we shouldn't do it. Until we know that we're safe and we're protecting the health of people and we're not going to have an environmental disaster that we're going to spend years dealing with, we shouldn't do anything.
So don't do anything until we know more, but he certainly didn't close the door. So how do you see that New York State policy debate taking shape?
Well, I think it's going to be a very, very, very tough debate because the question is always going to be, well, how sure is sure? What do you choose to believe? I mean, the EPA is beginning the process of what would be, hopefully, the most comprehensive study on hydraulic fracturing and drinking water supplies that has yet been carried out. But that you're not likely to get answers for that until maybe for another couple of years. And even that's in doubt because we don't know about the EPA's budget. We don't know whether Republicans in Congress will choose to try to cut that kind of budget, prevent them from being able to carry out that sort of study. So you will always have people in New York State who are very against this, who are very concerned and who don't see this as worthwhile. New York City obviously has very legitimate concerns about any drilling within its watershed. And I sort of agree with that. I have to wonder if it's ever worth doing that. But at the same time, the jobs, and especially for a state that's having fiscal issues, the tax revenue you can get from doing this is going to be hard to turn down as well. So this is going to be a very difficult decision, I think, for the governor.
Well, this is the difficult context for the country. Every major energy source is fraught: oil, gas, nuclear, coal. And if you try to start a debate on hydropower, you better duck fast. But the world wants to keep buying more electronic toys and more personal cars and bigger, warmer homes. We're consuming energy at an astounding pace, and it's spreading from what we thought of as the developing world to the huge countries of India and China. So if every major energy source is either fraught with pollution or not ready for mass market, in the case of true renewables, in the context of all this, what's your own conclusion after researching this article? Should environmentalists keep an open mind about natural gas?
I think ultimately, yes. I mean, I think because for all the reasons you just mentioned, as long as we keep using energy the way we are right now, as long as we keep increasing the amount of energy we use, we're going to need it from these kind of sources. And so we had a choice either to pull back or we may have to try to pick and choose and see what's better. And frankly, with gas, I mean, if you compare it to coal, even with the questions right now over climate change, there are things you can do with gas to reduce that loss of methane to the atmosphere to improve its climate change sort of side of things. Ultimately, as long as we keep needing more energy, we're going to have to go to deeper and darker places to get it, whether it's hydrofracking or whether it's ultra-deep water drilling for oil off Brazil or India, places like that. We'll look to nuclear. So we're in a situation where our choice will ultimately be defined by how much energy we use. That will lead us to try to begin to mix this out, I think.
Brian Walsh, Time Magazine correspondent. He wrote a cover story and then a follow-up blog post on natural gas and the potential for it helping lead the United States to a post-carbon, post-energy import or oil import future. Thanks so much for coming on with us. I think people know a lot more than they did a few minutes ago.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, we posted a link on our website to a summary of the findings in the Cornell University study on natural gas and carbon. You can find it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up next, we have a follow-up Friday segment, which follows up on yesterday's segment about the Mexico drug wars. The question was raised, is it immoral to smoke pot or use other drugs, knowing how many people are dying in the Mexico drug wars? And after we got some pushback on that question from some of you, we will look at how much of the marijuana sold in our area is actually a product of Mexico. Stay with us.